When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, this is Ace Frehley, and you're listening to Shout It Out Loud Cast. Don't touch that dial.
Shock me. Put on
your black. Oh boy. Here we go.
Oi.
Down.
Kiss.
Stop pressing the button.
Star Grover Simmons.
Star?
Paul Stanley.
Is that what he does?
Stop shouting.
I mean, Ace Frehley.
He's not what you would call a handsome man.
Oh, no. Here come the kiss times.
Is that a positive thing? Okay.
All right.
I'm going to grab me an ice cold mellow yellow.
Why? Why do that to the fan?
Stop it.
Why?
Because fuck.
Talking about 617-525-0.
You do? Hey, fucko!
Do you like Kiss?
Settle down.
Hello! Hey, what's up there, Kiss Army? Tom and Zeus in another episode of Shout It Out Loudcast, episode 271, Carnival of Souls, album review time. Tom,
it's Carnival of Souls, the final session. Get it right. Yes, it's album review time. Nothing we love more than these. And I'll tell you, me personally speaking, there's nothing more that I love than a polarizing Kiss album review. Because when we do the classics, they're fun, but they kind of get a little boring. When we're doing something like this, oh boy.
Yeah, you have been waiting to discuss this album for years.
Yeah.
Years.
Yes. And you'll all find out why.
So let's get to last week's feedback. As we always do, we go backwards before we go forward. What was last week's poll on the episode we did with David Ellefson, formerly of Megadeth?
Yes, that's right. Great episode with him. We love Dave. Oh, I love Megadeth. We'll talk about that. So again, we said this last week. Anytime we have an interview that's not kind of easy to pick a poll, we kind of just go like maybe news related, which is what we did this week. So we covered a lot of the Kiss sale to Pop House, and that was what the poll was about. And we said, how do you feel about the Kiss sale to Pop House? The options were happy for the band, it changes nothing, terrible move, or huh, what sale? 52% said they think it changes nothing. 35% were happy for the band, which I guess you could technically vote for both of those. 8% said it was a terrible move. And 4% either don't know about the sale or thought they were being funny with the sale.
Mm-hmm.
Our buddy Costa, great episode. I have seen Mustaine and Megadeth 10 times, the only band more than Kiss. I always love hearing how many rock stars grew up like as Kiss-tards like us. Wow. That's pretty awesome, dude. I like Megadeth. Never seen him 10 times. Actually, never seen them at all.
We were just talking about this. He sounds like he's singing with his teeth clenched and he's got marbles in his mouth.
Who, Dave?
Yeah.
Dave? Oh,
yeah.
Look.
A friend of yours, Dave?
Oh, yeah, Mr. Mustaine. Dude, I like Megadeth, but Dave is just, hello, me. Meet the real me.
Dude, all right. Fucking meet the vocalist coach. Go see him because you need him.
Yeah, he's, yeah, we'll just leave it at that. Let's see. Our buddy Bill Elam. Great show. David is a super guy. He has a long-term memory on a Gene Simmons level. I met him. He recalled the places in Dayton that Megadeth played, from tiny clubs to historic venues. And Bill posts a cool picture of him and Dave. Very neat. Very, very cool.
I love Bill. He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, super nice guy. Hen and Satan's Service. Great episode. From the 80s hair scene to grunge, thrash, and even some country artists, the influence that Kiss has had is incredible. Yes, that's true. Kevin Johnson, great show. Kiss is our Beatles. Damn right. Yes,
you people are. People really like that comment.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I think people like it when somebody with some status has it. Like, even if you're not a Megadeth fan, David Ellefson is like a legendary bass player. So when he starts saying those kinds of things, people are like, okay, that carries some weight, as opposed to, like, you know, Joey Quesada saying it. People are like, what?
Oh, great. Now I got to throw his fucking comments in. Thank you.
Just delete
it. Fuck him.
Exactly.
I know Joey Quesada.
Fucking bozo. What's he putting up now? His fucking, fucking strawberry shortcake doll collection?
Well, he's taking a cue from some of these other people we see on, hey, look at my fucking G.I. Joe fucking Kung Fu Grip doll that I had. I still sleep with him.
Just because you're older doesn't mean you're not a fucking nerd collecting stupid shit still.
Yeah, but there's nothing. Look, I'll be the first one, but there's nothing wrong with collecting stupid shit. But let me tell you this. When you're older, keep it private.
Or join
like a dork group on Facebook
and hide it.
And hide it. And then put a bag over your head.
What, like, the fuck was he doing talking about some sort of fucking Star Trek fucking dork alternative fucking play date shit he was doing? I don't know what he was doing. But, you know, you're a nerd. You're pretty proud of it.
Pretty proud of it. All right. Anyways, that's what we got for Twitter this week.
All right. Let's go to the Book of Face and wash those Quesada germs off this episode, please. The tax man, Anthony Barone, ABCPAInc.com. Go check him out. Says crushing it with the new guests. Another favor of ours, Keith Rochford, said, what a year so far. You guys are hitting it into the ozone. Your buddy and my buddy, Backpack Brad Rusthoven.
Yeah.
Great episode, guys. Amazing conversation with Ellefson. He appeared so relaxed. Kudos to your guys' interview style. Regarding Papa's deal, two things. Number one, he heard us when somebody told us it was going to be for $4 billion in New York, and we all fucking laughed. I was like, oh, listen to him telling me it's $4 billion. Sorry, buddy. I had to embarrass. It wasn't Brad that said it, but he got a kick out of it. Anyway, the deal was way more about the brand, trademarks, and IP than Kiss's music. The music is not in the same stratosphere, pun intended, as the likes of Springsteen, Dylan, Bowie, Sting, Paul Simon, and Neil Young. Two, the more I think about it, to believe any mentions of a collaboration was simply to appease the diehard fans, kind of like when a legendary coach retires but stays involved with the team. That is to calm and soothe the fan base during the transition. Pop House calls the shots. I'm sure they do.
Brilliant, Brad.
Sure, they're going to have to go back to Paul and Gene.
No.
Listen to me.
They aren't.
Can I finish what you I can. Was
you,
say?
You can.
Okay. I'm sure they're going to have to go back to Paul and Gene about certain questions when they're about to release things. As an advisor, they need them on the fucking payroll, along with Tommy and Eric, to go back to them every once in a while and be like, hey, if we release this and this now, what's your thoughts? What do you think, Kiss? You're not going to use their input? Absolutely.
Universal doesn't use their input.
Universal.
When Universal releases shit, they don't ask for Paul and G. What do you think of this compilation? They just release it. We buy it.
Yeah. Watch. There's not just music. There's other stuff. They know enough about the Kiss Army. They want to keep them a please. I'm telling you, they're part of it. They have a percentage. And I think that they're going to be constantly involved.
Now, I hope you're right.
It's not going to be day-to-day shit. It's somebody else's money. But I'm sure that every once in a while, they're going to have to pick up the phone and call Paul or Gene and be like, hey, we're doing this or that.
I hope
so
you're
right. So you have to have them as part of the project, part of the team. Why not?
I hope you're right, because my fear is, like I said last week, is that it's going to be the Disneyfication of KISS like they did with Marvel and Star Wars. And it just became an oversaturation and a lowering of the brand.
So there's all sorts of things I've been hearing of what's going to be happening.
And I don't like any of it.
But I don't have a problem with it. If you want it, buy it. If you don't. What's going to end up happening? You're going to see fucking KISS shirt and KISS merch at every fucking pub outlet you'll ever fucking see. They'll be selling shit all over the place. Who gives a fuck? You like it? Like I said, buy it. You don't? Fuck off.
Yeah,
who cares? Why does that bother you? It's not music that they're going to be releasing.
Exactly.
It's fucking products. So what do we care? They need to make their money back because they're going to fucking do a big deal with that whole fucking Avatar shit, and that's going to fund it, having all that money coming in.
Stupid.
Well, we'll find out soon enough, right? Dan, don't call me a mutant from Stonehill. Ooh. Very cool. Can't wait. I read interviews where Dave praises Gene's bass playing. I know he's definitely a fan. Oh, he is. If you listen, you'll definitely know. And let's go over to Loudcasters. And while we're here, just a quick comment I want to get off my chest. There's a couple shit stirrers that love to put up shit. Unpopular opinion, revenge sucks, or oh, this is a terrible album. Fucking love to get clicks and comments. And then when we put the episode or a comment about the episode somebody puts up, they're like, what's that about? I don't understand.
Yeah.
And like, you don't even fucking listen. You just come here to get clicks and comments. So get used to it, because it's going to all go away, because I'm going to fucking kick your ass out after a while. I don't need stupid shit. You know, have comments that you mean something or really have an opinion, not stupid shit.
I like approving stupid shit once in a while, because then the Loudcaster just sick them on them, and they just
get your point. You're right.
I like that.
Okay,
but I see both sides. I do,
but
it gets annoying.
You know, not someone just to come here and fucking and get the shout it out Loudcast rub, and then fucking jerk off all day about it.
Yeah, and by the way, fucking Destroyer sucks, unpopular opinion.
Yeah, exactly. That shit's got to go. Here's another one that's got to go. Stop putting up stupid AI shit. That's got to go, too.
See, the only reason I do that is so people be like, dude, what the fuck? So what we're doing right now, I like it when the Loudcasters do it to the person posting AI shit.
So then fucking all you people listening, the real fans of the fucking show and the page, please tell these people enough of this shit. Because it's fucking annoying. Here's my AI of Ace playing at Tom Shed.
That just sounded like a wrestling thing. All you people out there listening, the real fans.
Yeah. All you people out there on rented furniture.
Exactly.
Anyways, Loudcasters. John Whiteman says, I hope you can get him on again when he has more time. It was great to hear a future Rock and Roll Hall of Famer and the guy who played bassline from MTV News.
Right.
Paying respect to Gene's bass playing along with the STP song.
That's right. Yeah, I like Megadeth. That they're never getting in the Hall of Fame. If fucking Iron Maiden is not in the Hall of Fame, Megadeth ain't getting in.
The Greek Thunder from Down Under, Thanos Akratidis. Fantastic interview. It's a KISS world, and we're all living in it.
Yeah.
Pity couldn't go on longer. Need to get the man back to hear some depth stories. Great job, Tom and George. This show only gets better.
Who's George?
No.
Thanks, Thanos. Speaking of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Frozen Tears, they're on their way to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, his band?
Thanos's band. Yeah, great stuff.
They do a nice version of Come On and Love Me. I know
Yes,
that.
They do. Yeah, they do.
And he ends with, this show's only get her better by the week. Love it.
Thanks, buddy.
Justin Seal says, great episode. I happen to agree with Tom on the question of the week. I wish it ended after Farewell Tour with the original four and get back with Bruce and make real music. The last 25 years of makeup and the same set list sucked, in my opinion. Kind of like keeping the corpse alive.
I love that. That's tough, but true.
Tom, over to you, buddy.
We're going to take one email from our buddy Baden McLeod. The title of his email is Eddie Trunk. He says, so I'm slowly going through the back catalog of SIOL episodes, and I'm now listening to the Hot in the Shade Tour episode. I had tickets to the show in Eastern Canada, and it was canceled due to Paul's injury. He promised to return, but he never did. You guys are also talking about how Eddie Trunk will never come on the show. This is like a movie. You know how it's going to end because Eddie was on your show, but how does it happen? I can't wait to find out. Keep up the great work. Best podcast on the interweb. But Baden, that is actually kind of hilarious when we hear this from people that maybe have just discovered us and go back and listen, and knowing what you know today and hearing those old episodes, it is kind of entertaining. So thanks for that email. Appreciate it, Baden. Zeus, what do we got on the tube?
All right, Tom, on YouTube, our buddy Chris Flood. You guys are hitting it out of the park on these interviews and on the show and Dorm Damage. I hope Ellison comes back for a couple hours while other Ham and Eggers, his cast, Ham and Eggers, sounds like Fred Cusick and Derek Sanderson.
I was just going to say that's such an old, that is such an old hockey term.
On WSBK TV 38, while other Ham and Eggers, Kiss cast, are talking about the toys in the attic, you guys are providing great entertainment. Thumbs up on Tuck Smith. Yeah, Tuck's great. So glad we're getting a lot of feedback on him. People really liking him
and checking
out his music. Good for you. He's a good guy. So that's really, I'm really happy to see that. Chris, we appreciate your comments all the time. And this was another good one. So we want to thank you and give you the comment of the week.
Good answer. Good answer. I like the way you think. Going
to
be watching you.
Chris, thanks, buddy. Much appreciated. Really, that's awesome.
Tom, I also want to thank our Patreon family. Patreon is where you guys can help us out and help the show. There are four different tiers. You sign up and you get perks from us, like what we're doing right now, which is the ARC Song Madness Tournament going on currently. And sadly, no real big surprises there so far.
Nothing.
But you guys were a part of that. You're also a part of our ARC Album of the Month choosing, which should be coming up shortly again. You guys get merch. You guys get feedback. You're on our message boards. We have polls. We have involvement. We have video chats. There's tons of stuff there. And if you join, you're helping out the show and having a lot of fun and being supportive of Shout It Out Loudcast. So if people want to ask, how can we help the show? What can we do? This and that. You really want to help us out and you like what you're hearing, please join our Patreon family and you get something back. And we really appreciate it. So go to shoutitoutloudcast.com, our website, and right on the landing page, you'll see Patreon. Or you just look up patreon.com or Patreon the app. You look for creators, Shout It Out Loudcast, and you find one of the tiers that fits your needs and help the show. Anyway, we appreciate it. Thank you to all our current Patreon family members. We appreciate you. And please take a look and help the show. Thank you very much.
Patreon family, we love you guys. Thank you so much for your generosity, whether you're a new member or you've been a long time, first timer. We love you guys. Thank you so much. Please, if you're interested, check us out. You can find all the information on our website, or you can click on the Patreon link there, or you can download the app and search for us. Please, we much appreciate it. Thank you to everybody.
Tom, what we do next is we go over to Kiss World, and not much going on, buddy.
No, it's kind of weird because the big news was last week with the sale. And since then, it's been like literal crickets, nothing, no new merch, no new nothing. The members have been quiet, not really much. Bruce is always very active on his social media, posted something today. We're recording on Wednesday, April 10th, about the anniversary of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's selling some cool BK Bruce Kulick Crazy Nights inspired merch. Check him out on his website.
Yeah, he's got a new cool t-shirt too.
Yep.
That kind of like diamond BK shirt I like.
Yep. And he's, I see, was advertising something else regarding the radioactive stuff that he was wearing during that era. Bruce is great, obviously, and he's always staying active. But in terms of the band itself, really, very, very, very quiet week.
Yeah. And that's okay, because we can still do a show without their news.
That's right. We don't need the news.
No. And Tom, what we do next is we take a little break and we get ready to discuss Carnival of Souls. Carnival of Souls. Was that an album that I wrote a couple songs with Pepe Castro, my best friend? I think I got a couple writing credits on that. I don't remember. Did that come out before or after Houses of the Holy?
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Okay, we're back. And yeah, Ace was really excited about the carnival.
I remember when I was a kid, I used to go on my favorite ride was that Tilt-A-Whirl. The teacups, kind of a little bit of a fun thing too, but I always used to get sick and maybe have a couple accidents here and there, kind of like I do today, but big fan of the carnivals. I'm not sure what a Carnival of Soul is, but, you know, teacups, Tilt-A-Whirl, the Scrambler was always a good one too. I'm thinking back of that picture of him on that fucking carnival ride
with his on the swing with his feet.
He's got the bad wig on. I think Lara's in front of him. He's in the back. And he's like, oh, shit. Look out below. I don't feel so hot.
Oh, God.
Anyway, Tom, we are going to talk about a very, very polarizing album. So what we normally do when we do album reviews, we talk about the album, how we first came into it. Why don't you start us off?
So it's funny when we were talking about like preparing for this, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of background info to this and everything. And I'm like, no, there actually isn't. But for me, this is kind of a weird time in Kiss world, because this came out 2 years after we graduated college. So we were kind of like on our own with like discovering music. It wasn't like we were in college.
Yep.
This came out after the reunion. And I remember like finding it at a record store, probably Tower Records or Newbury Comics, the one I used to go to in Burlington all the time. And like, I don't know what this is. Like, I didn't hear any buzz about it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't hear about a bootleg or unreleased stuff or nothing. And I remember listening to it. I was like, what the fuck? Like, this is like Kiss doing like grunge type metal shit, and it just blew me away. I thought at the time it was good, and I don't want to say right now what I think of it, you know, 25 plus years later, but not a lot of very specific clear memories of getting this, because it's just kind of a weird album.
Yeah, so we all know the story about, oh, there was, the bootleg was out there, this and this and that. Look, at that point in my life, I loved Kiss just as much as you did. But I wasn't, like, hooked on something where the internet was still kind of new. So I didn't hear about the bootleg. I didn't know that there's a bootleg of this album. And I wasn't that crazed about it. At that point, I was, like, in law school, I believe. It's right after I went... 95, right? Yeah, when I graduated, I went right to law school. So I'm in the middle of law school studying, doing my own thing.
That's funny you say, because I was in the middle of going to graduate school. I was at Suffolk, like, taking classes at night. You were going to law school. We were working. It's like, and like you said, the internet really didn't exist.
No, and so, like, I didn't hear anything about it. And then when me and you talked, it was about, oh shit, the reunion's coming. And then this album came out. I bought it. I listened to it. But it was still, again, one of those things, you're distracted because of the reunion stuff going on, right, which I think happened for a lot of people out there. So there was no real, like, affection or like me hearing that, oh, this new Kiss album's coming out on this date, and I ran out to buy it. I think I just randomly got it. So, So that's Carnival of Souls. The next thing we usually get into is the album cover.
Well, I mean, in retrospect, I don't mind it. It's definitely not what you expect from Kiss, but neither is the album. I mean, I'll just get this out of the way now. I'll say this now, and it's going to kind of carry on throughout the entire album, cover included. Gene, Eric, and Bruce, the three of them, this entire scene and this entire sound suits them to a T. Paul is a fish out of water, from the album cover photo to the album as we get into it later. I this is just not his thing. That being said, I don't really have a problem with it. I mean, it kind of makes it look like they're like a grungy garage band. You know, they're just sitting there with a puss on their face. Bruce with the big beard, Gene looking menacing as always. We always say this, it's not a Kiss cover, quote unquote, but what the hell was it going to be? There was no makeup, obviously. The reunion had already happened when this came out. So what do you do with this cover? You just take a picture of the band performing.
Yeah, Tom, to me, it's kind of funny. Paul Steele needs to always be in the forefront.
Oh, yeah.
Of an album cover.
With a white shirt on.
If you didn't know any better, you think Bruce is number two and Bruce is the his partner.
Yep.
Because Bruce is a little more featured in this on the right-hand side.
That's
and,
right.
And larger than Gene.
Yep.
Gene looks like he's, you know, lurking in the background. Eric looks like he's just back there on the drums. And you're right. Look at the clothes. They look like, you know, we're in the fucking mountains. We're in Vancouver.
Yep.
We're fucking trying to do this record. We've been here for over a month and a half.
Yep.
And we're tired and whatever. Paul does not just, he's got like a Prince white shirt, jacket, whatever the fuck that is.
He's even standing like Prince. He's got like his legs crossed with like some
and he's got these black leather pants that would fucking make Dwight Yoakam go, "You got some tight ass pants."
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, and
good.
These boots, it just, he cannot do this. Now we'll get to that part in this album about Paul and everything, where he fits. But even starting off with the cover, Paul is, like you said, and we'll be saying this a lot, this isn't him.
Yeah. Now the cool thing about this is, if you've been on the interwebs always, obviously, for a while, the original, there's artwork out there of what the album cover was going to be, and it's wicked fucked up for a Kiss album. It's like a picture of like an SNL, almost like a GIMP mask, mm-hmm, with the head on fire. Mm-hmm. Cause there were stories that the album was going to be called Head, maybe. And then there's another alternative album cover where it looks like the back of that someone's head is being like unzipped and like hands kind of crawling out of it. Yep. I mean, real fucking crazy shit for a potential Kiss album. but I think they that may have been what they were going to do if this was going to get a proper release, you know. And then when they realized, you know, we'll get into it, what happened, why they just released it like this. So,
yeah, you can just Google alternate Carnival of Souls covers, right. And, yep. And a bunch of images will show up.
Yep.
Regardless, this is another one of those lost opportunities. Jericho always talks about fucking album's going to be called Monster. What's the cover going to look like?
Exactly.
What? And yep. You're like, so Carnival of Souls. What's the, okay. I get what they're saying. Like, this is the end of this band. This is the end of this era of this band. Final sessions. Let's just show them work in the studio and try to like, but it's almost like, yeah, we want to be fucking, undersell like what we're doing here. This isn't important. Let's just throw this out and see what happens.
Well, the fact you bring up a good point. The fact that it's subtitled "The Final Sessions," it's like, yeah, here you go. Here you go.
Here is Zeppelin. Here you go. We're gonna put it in a brown bag. You'll find it. We're trying to be coy that we can still sell when we put it in a brown bag.
Right, right, right.
You know,
you're right. Yep.
So I don't know. It is what it is. It's definitely different.
Another interesting thing, too, this is one of the few albums in their entire catalog that doesn't get represented on Kiss Online when they do the anniversaries. No picture disc, no reissue, no merch, no not. It's like it doesn't exist.
It's like that part in that song from Rage Against the Machine. You settle for nothing now and you'll settle for nothing later. Fuck you. This is what you're getting.
That's right. That's right.
And, you know, there's nothing. You ain't getting a picture desk. You ain't getting a fucking hot dog, hamburger, or whatever you want. There.
Nope.
Fucking.
Nope. Nope.
What do you call it? Smalls there. Fucking from Caddyshack.
Yep.
But I don't know. This is what I like to think what we're going to be talking about is the Elder Part 2. Because that's where this falls in. It's the Elder Part 2 of the Kiss catalog.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll definitely get to that. Hold that thought.
Yeah, but I'm just telling you right now, hence your comment about no reissues and things like that.
Well, no, yeah, but remember what they did a massive celebration for the 40th anniversary of the Elder.
Yeah, but
they released two different picture discs, t-shirts.
How about the first 25 years of the fucking Elder where they treated it like shit? You could barely find it. I remember, like when CDs and everything came out, you couldn't find this.
Right.
The Elder was fucking like, oh, we don't want to release this shit.
Fuck. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
All right. Let's get to the actual album info.
Yeah.
Carnival of Souls, although it was recorded in 95 through 96, it didn't get released as an official album, probably because they were losing money with all the bootlegs and said, fuck it, just put it out. October 28th, 1997. Wow.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that they cared enough to officially release it because bootlegs were leaking. And it's also kind of, for me personally, I'm grateful to the bootleggers because can you imagine a fully recorded Kiss album not being released? Think about that. If the bootleggers didn't leak this, this would have never been released. I know there's a lot of Kiss fans out there that probably say, I wish that was the case. But I can't believe a recorded out, maybe the production wasn't completely finalized. But if it wasn't for the bootleggers, this would have been sitting somewhere.
From what I understand.
Yeah, in my vault.
Yeah. From what I understand, I believe they're like I Walk Alone wasn't even the last track. It wasn't even on the bootleg. And things like that. So
right.
Glad everything did come out. The album was produced by Toby Wright, Toby Wong, Toby Thung, Charlie fucking Chan. Toby Wright, who we love from the Alice in Chains albums.
Yeah.
And Paul and Gene. They got co-producing credit on it. The album went up to number 27 on US Billboard. It has not been deemed anything, whether it be gold or platinum or anything. We have no rankings for us or certifications for it at all. I haven't seen any.
Yep.
It's the last album with Bruce. It's the last non-makeup album. There was no tour to support this album, obviously. It's the only album to feature a Bruce Kulick vocal. And as I said, it's kind of considered the Elder Part 2 for its stepchild-like fucking affection from the Kiss Army. The one thing I will say, though, I think this production is fucking incredible.
I can't believe you just said that, because that's one of the things people hate about this. I fucking love the dry, like, I can't think of the right word, but it's not crisp and polished and powerful and overproduced. I don't know what it is about this. There are certain songs on here where it really stands out how much I love the production on this album.
Like Butch Vig or something on Nevermind. I can hear it nice and clean. I get
every instrument. Every instrument sounds, you can hear everything here.
And the thing is, it's probably because of his engineering background, Toby Wright.
Yep.
And then they're like, you know what? Let's bring him in to produce this. Now, I think he's a fantastic producer and stuff.
Yep.
People either like his style or they don't. Me, I think this is one of the shining points of the album, is his incredible production.
He's also
the engineer and mixer on this album, Toby Wright. And there's another guy named David Bryant was an assistant engineer. I don't know what that means, but
you also hear a lot of people saying, the album sounds the way it does because it wasn't completed. They released it because it wasn't completed. I'm like, okay, I don't have any information to confirm or deny that, but to me, this sounds like a completed, produced, mixed album to me.
Okay, so you know what I would say to that is, you go listen to Hot in the Shade, and then go listen to this, and then tell me what the difference is.
No, of course. Yeah.
So what is the big difference between those albums?
Hotter Than Hell sounds like absolute dog shit and makes it unlistenable. Exactly.
And it was fucking produced by Paul and Gene. What's the difference between this one? They still have producing credit.
They brought in a fucking pro.
Yeah, who fucking did an incredible job. That's done half-assed. This was done right.
Another big thing here with this album, Bruce Kulick, 9 co-writes. 9 of 12 co-writes on this, which is fucking awesome. And another thing, and I'm sure we'll get into this as we talk about the song, Bruce plays bass on every song except for the Gene vocals, I believe.
Now, there's a couple that he doesn't. So let's just bang that out right now. So he plays bass on Rain. He plays bass on Jungle. He plays bass on It Never Goes Away. And he plays bass on In the Mirror. So
all the Paul songs.
Yeah. The only Paul song I don't think he plays bass on is Master and Slave.
Yeah. It's wild. Bruce is all over this album, which to me makes perfect sense because Bruce is a heavy rock guy. I mean, he was in Union. You listen to Union. Union is very, not that different from this Carnival of Souls album. I like that self-titled Union album. It's fucking great. We'll get to it eventually because it's a Bruce album.
So with the exception of Master and Slave, he did bass on basically everything.
Yeah, it's a fucking killer Bruce album to me. And then his lead guitar work is fucking insane again on here. Yeah. We'll get to it, obviously, but I gush over a lot of things with this album here. So, and no, it's not because I'm a grunge guy. We'll get to that.
So the couple other things I wanted to bring up, and that is that Bruce at this point started getting his confidence and everything else. And I feel like he was going to be a Vinnie Vincent type of influence on the band had they continued to go forward.
Totally. Yes.
If you think about 100%. This, you would look at how Lick It Up. All of a sudden, Vinny gets all these fucking writing credits and all part of the writing. And Bruce said they appreciated it, and he just fucking went all in and made himself. He didn't just sit back and wait for them to ask. He got involved and was like, hey, what do you need me to do? Yep. And he did all that. And good for him because, Bruce's involvement with the band, who knows what could have happened in the future.
I say that all the time. When it was question of the week last week with this line, when they ended or this line, I love, love, love this lineup. Love it.
Yeah. And this is sadly the kind of like what would have happened from here. Who knows?
Yep. I agree.
You know, although you do get Tommy jumping in here with the writing credit. You got Jamie St. James coming in here with the writing credit. So you got some of that Black and Blue. You got Nick Simmons helping out on Childhood's End as a backing vocalist. You got the choir that's on that song track as well, the Crossroads Boys Choir. And then a lady named Carol Kaiser, who did like the arrangements strings. And strings
yep.
on Childhood's End, I Will Be There, and also I Confess. So those are all the people that were involved in the making of this album.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do next is we go to the fucking tracks.
Yep.
All right. First track.
All right, so we start with Hate, which in my opinion is the only song in the entire catalog that can even touch Unholy in terms of heaviness. I mean, this actually blows Unholy away. This is Unholy on steroids. The riff and what Eric Singer is doing on the drums is fucking out of this world. Like a blowaway opening track. And Gene, this may be the best. Like, I thought Unholy, he sounded insane. When he screams Hate, like the song, the way it just starts off with the title, he just sounds absolutely fucking bonkers. Eric is insane. The solo is out of this world. It's crazy shit. It is. I just think this song is such a spectacular standout heavy metal demon song. Even like the outro when he's just like screaming Hate. I just think it's just fucking phenomenal.
Hey, so it's written by Gene Simmons, Scott Van Zandt, and Bruce Kulick. Bruce said he contributed to the bridge, but Gene brought in the song and the major fucking heavy riff. So you're right, Tom. This is just so grungy, heavy, dark. I think of this as the sister song of Unholy. And his scream and his growl when he says image of
but it fits him. Like, to me, I don't think that he's pretending to be something else.
Okay. So this is, you know, everyone's, oh, it's just a grunge. Yes, it is very Alice in Chains Soundgarden. The solo, even the solo on this.
Yeah.
It sounds like the solo from Them Bones from Jerry Cantrell.
It's fucking nuts.
The fuzz on the outro, the feedback. So it works. If you look at the previous album, Gene, everybody was like, oh, Gene's got the demon back. He finally figured out how to be in this non-makeup era.
Right.
So this works for him. This character works. This evilness, the growl stuff. It's just amazing that this is the same singer that later on sings Seduction of the Inches.
Save it.
It's not saving it. I'm just saying the fucking vocal things that Gene can do.
He's awesome.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And this is, it's got a thunder. Like that vocals. It fucking works. It's a kick-ass song. It really is. And I really think people would lose their minds if they ever actually played this song.
God bless Bruce and his band. They've done it on the cruise. But we didn't talk about the funny little intro part there when you get all that wicked, wicked feedback and everything. Yeah. But that little, that the vocals in the background and the little verbiage that you can hear.
Yeah.
I think it's Paul, but it's back. Some of it's played backwards and it's through like an enhancer and affecting. And somebody is saying Little Billy Corgan.
I don't know what they're saying, but
yeah, that's part of what they're saying at the thing there. Because Gene loved the sound of Smashing Pumpkins. He said, I want to be the next, like, I want to be like Billy Corgan. And people were like, no, you're Gene Simmons. You don't need to be anybody else.
Yeah, there's plenty of dialogue. You can read it in all the books and everything. And Behind the Mask, Gene's book, and Paul specifically about the fucking pushback. But he said, when one of us is that passionate about it, you kind of like, okay, you got it. You want it. And Gene's like, yeah, because I can do this, bitch. Now let's turn it over to you and see what you do with track number two.
So the next song is Rain. This is Paul trying his hand at the Carnival of Souls sound. Paul's vocals at the beginning, like during the verses, just don't work. He just doesn't have the tone for a song like this. Now, when they go into the bridge and the chorus, when he's like, I think it's going to rain, like Paul is hitting notes out of this world. Even when they do the little breakdown, like that's like awesome Paul. When they have the little backward vocal effects, like with the rain down on me, and it's like that's such a late 90s shit. The solo again is just nasty and vicious by Bruce. I love it, but I said this earlier at the onset, it's just not Paul's vocals. You just really can't do it. It's the song is not bad. It's got like that weird timed signature. It's kind of like a little offbeat. Bruce even talks about that, but I just think Paul kind of struggles to kind of carry what needs to be carried in this song.
Rain. Now, this is written by this trifecta of songwriters, Paul Stanley, Bruce Kulick, and a guy named Curtis Cuomo. I don't know if he's related to Mario Cuomo from New York, but these three are kind of like throughout this album when Paul writes. So Bruce says he came up with the riff. Again, we're back to a heavy AIC, Alice in Chains type riff. I mean, I'm thinking when this comes in, it sounds like Sludge Factory or goddamn.
Yeah, exactly. That the riff is so Alice in Chains.
But you know, Alice in Chains three-legged dog.
Yes.
Which was, it came out in 95, late in 95. That's when these guys started writing for the song. I don't know, but
yep.
It's there. It doesn't work. I'm going to say it right now. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Paul cannot do this. I feel like, I think he's trying, but Paul singing stuff like, I can't stand myself anymore. That is not Paul Stanley. It's not believable. It's not Paul to listen to Paul Stanley, king of the nighttime world, the guy who wants to fucking rock tomorrow and tonight and wants to turn on the night to say, I can't stand myself anymore.
Well, plus the tone of his vocals, tell me what you want me. Like there's no gravitas to his vocals like Gene carries.
Okay.
For songs like this.
Throughout this album, I have extreme problem with Paul's delivery.
Oh, me too.
He fucks. It doesn't work. He's not singing Paul White. He's doing something else with his voice. The delivery is off. This is.
He's trying to be down and depressed and like he's trying to be like a grumpy star child. He's just not. It doesn't work. In this particular song, it doesn't work. There are some songs where it works that we'll get to.
I don't know. The drums are pretty big here. I put this very another Cantrell like solo. And that's a good thing. Like whatever Bruce is doing, it's a good thing. The song is okay, but do I need Paul Stanley singing about rain?
No,
this isn't the rain song. It doesn't work.
It's not Rain When I Die either by Alice in Chains. Yeah. No, we don't want to hear that either.
It's just, it's okay. Like I said, I can listen to this. This isn't what I want Paul's voice for or lyrics for.
No. No.
All right, let's go to the next track.
Remain unsaid. Hide a race you never win. Look back at where we've been and throw the towel in.
Master and Slave, absolutely killer, sick riff in this song. Fucking from the first time I heard this song to today when I listened to the album, incredible. And I love how during the verses, it's just the bass and the drums. But again, we just talked about it on Rain. A candle burning bright. A candle. Like now, when he gets to the chorus, it's spectacular. Every time I see you cry, tell me. Like, he sounds great. The band just absolutely kicks into another gear and they sound killer. But the verses are just on this. Paul sounds great. I'm going to say this a lot because it's the way the songs are written. Killer during the choruses, asleep at the wheel during the verses. Another great solo. And I love when Paul does that scream. Like, instead of saying the word scream as part of the lyric,
Wake up to star two.
And then exactly. Then he does the scream. I think that's killer. I love this song. I can deal with Paul's kind of weak versus vocals, but I think the song just rips. I think it's a great one.
So Master and Slave again, Paul Stanley, Bruce Kulick, Curtis Cuomo. Cool opening riff is Gene's idea of just doing the bass on the verses. I love that.
Yep.
Bruce wrote the bridges and slash chorus. It's the Paul delivery again with him and like driving by a car.
Yeah, it's
okay, whatever the fuck is going on. Just honestly, with the bass and the way this is, how cool would it be with Gene doing this song?
Oh, yeah,
every time I do that. Dude, it would fucking kill with Bruce, Gene doing this. I'm telling you. I really think so. That's a fucking Ezrin bridge in there that Paul wants to start using.
Yep.
I just like it's a very different type of Bruce solo. And you can, and it proves that Bruce is versatile because it's very different. Again, I'm going to say the bass is just fucking awesome. There's a nice Bruce outro. And it's actually the first non-grungy type of song on this album.
Yes. Yep.
And it's a pretty decent song. Still different. It's not party fucking, again, let's put the X in sex in all night. But it's towards that Revenge Paul type stuff that was coming in.
So. Agreed. Yep.
All right. Four track.
Childhood's End, another Gene vocal, very different vocal here, based on a book. Gene talks about this book written by Arthur C. Clarke called Childhood's End, about the last stages of evolution when we become spirit entities. All right, relax, Gene. Just cut the shit. Just cut the shit. Stop it.
He was right. He was writing about anal sex.
Like, that's what.
But here's the thing about this song, and it's funny, when people point to Carnival of Souls, sometimes they point to like a song like this. I've always liked this song. I have always liked, I absolutely.
Go back. What do you mean, like, people point to this?
Okay.
As what?
As like a bad song, a dud.
Oh, like
bad,
why this album sucks?
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yes, yes. Like, oh, Childhood's End, that's fucking terrible. Okay, well, it's not a hard rocking song. It's not Master and Slave. Easy. It's not Hate.
Yeah, Easy As It Seems and fucking Shandy. Yeah, I get the point.
but like we mentioned during Hate, I love how Gene can do so many different things vocally. And that, again, when he sings these verses as what, you know, whatever you want to make of the lyrics and what it's based on, I just think it's really cool. I think his vocals sound really, really cool. But two things I love about this song. I love it when the kids join in. I absolutely love when the kids join in. But the best part of this entire song, if you can make it to the end of it, as the gang vocals in the chorus are kind of singing the melody of the, you know, thing, and Gene's just kind of riffing, he does a little God of Thunder callback, which I fucking love, when he said, "You got something about you." And he's singing it differently. But I remember the first time I heard them, like, he just pulled fucking God of Thunder in the end, in the outro of the song. I just think it's a very cool song because I think it's very different. And for me, it's the kind of different that works.
I think there was an episode once where I did this lyric as my final words. And I said, yeah, "You are my friend." Till Childhood's End. Anyways, Childhood's End, from Gene Simmons, Tommy Thayer.
Yep.
And Bruce Kulick. Wow, the last two guitarists jumping in here, foreshadowing. Yep. Gene says Tommy came up with the chorus chord signature, but Bruce came up with the verse chord patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce played one of his favorite solos on the album on this.
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
You mentioned it, it's like Arthur C. Clarke's Childhood's End, something about humanity and stupid shit like this. I'm not even fucking gonna entertain it.
Don't.
But the story is that it's about a friend that reads in the paper about his childhood friend who became like a rock star, aka fucking, at the time, Kurt Cobain, and he blew his brains out or something like that. And he read in the New York Times.
Yep.
And on the box set, Tom, this is a big fucking thing.
Okay.
So, you know, on the box set, there's the different version of this.
Yes. Go ahead.
So it has the long outro on there, which Gene said that he did. Yep. It was his idea. They, you know, they just thought there was no need for it and they cut it out. They were right.
Yeah.
There's no need for it. I don't even understand the point of putting it in there.
No, I agree. No.
It's just fucking another a minute and something longer for and a different all of a sudden chord thing that you're doing there. It has nothing to do with the song. There's no need.
But like you always say, I'm glad it exists so that we can talk about it and say I don't want to listen to it rather than not having it.
But it's just another grunge type thing that Gene's all of a sudden the fade out and all of a sudden this other version of a different type of song comes in.
Yep.
It's like verse, chorus, verse after something in the way in Nirvana. It's just a lot of grunge.
I'm surprised
they're trying to do.
Yeah, I'm surprised there's not like a hidden track 99 on this CD.
Exactly. Gene burping after having an Italian sub. But anyways, Gene says everyone hated having the kids singers.
I love
it. It was hokey. It's funny when Ezrin does it. It's not hokey. Huh?
He's right, though. I thought that was, I think that's kind of a funny point.
So I'm thinking he's talking about the choir part of Great Expectations, not so much the little kids on the walkie talkies on God of Thunder.
Probably.
Because those kids fucking rock. I don't know what he's talking about. That's not hokey. That's badass.
I agree.
I like Bruce's solos. I actually like the kids part because I don't think it's overdone.
No.
It's not fucking stupid like that Jay-Z song. Whatever the fucking stupid shit is that ruined that song.
You bring up a good point, and I think the reason why it works is because it's not too choirish. It still sounds like little kids.
No, you have to really listen for it to pick them up because you just think it's background singers, and then you pick up that it's...
Right, I think that's why it works for me.
Choruses and stuff. Nick is one of the backing singers, and as we said earlier, the Crossroads Boys Choir.
Yep.
Was the ones on it. I like the song. I think it's different, but I think Gene can pull this off.
Yep.
Gene is non-makeup Gene works for this album. It works.
Dude, non-makeup Gene works, period. We talk about that all the time.
Yeah, but still you got, I wouldn't say that after listening to the last two tracks on Animalize, but that's me.
Murder. You love that.
Oh, it's fucking brutal.
Lonely.
I actually like that song, but
it's not bad.
All right. Tom, let's go to Paul's track next.
Each and every day. People turn away, change the things they feel, change the things they say. We can never know.
I will be there. So this song is musically very cool. There's a lot of weird instruments here. Some Indian drums, tablas, they call them, weird kind of acoustic instruments. Very, very cool sounding song musically. Now, over the years, Paul is, again, very whiny. I know he wrote the song about his son. The lyrics are beautiful. It's heartfelt. It sounds believable. It sounds authentic. There's a breakdown in the song that I think is kind of cool. Different songs have different meanings over there. I mean, I'm a father to a son, so I enjoy listening to the song. It's not a go-to track. It's not a standout track on the album, but I get it. I'm not gonna give Paul shit for writing a very heartfelt acoustic tribute to his boy. So I can't criticize him on that. He doesn't sound terrible. He just still sounds a little kind of weak and whiny, like we've mentioned on like Rain. Like it's still that real whiny kind of vocal that we don't expect from Paul and that we don't really like from Paul. But musically, I think the song is beautiful. I think Bruce and Paul together do a great job.
I Will Be There, written by Paul Stanley, Bruce Kulick, Curtis Cuomo. Tom, there was a song, I don't remember which one it was. And I brought up the story when I was in music class in grade school. Mm-hmm. Me and my best friend growing up, Paul, would purposely sing horrendously so that the teacher would make a face like, what the fuck is that?
Oh, yeah.
Who the fuck is, that's what this one is.
Yeah. It's each and every day.
Each and every day, we people come to my way. What the fuck is this vocal delivery? Holy fuck. It is brutal. And then, when after that part, he picks it up a little and his voice goes higher and he's not talking it gets a little bit better. The song is not bad. It's not fucking Shandy for me where I'm like, turn this off. This is fucking terrible.
Right.
I can hear this thing through. It's got a kind of, I don't know. It seems like something that Cornell would have put on the bonus CD for single soundtrack.
Yep.
An acoustic Seattle type sound.
Yep.
Okay. Paul says it's his son's favorite song. Of course it is. You wrote it about him.
Yeah.
And with that comes the whole just the insufferable Paul thing. When he has his mind on something, we're all going to have to fucking deal with it.
Yep.
No, Psycho Circus is a classic. You know why? Because you fucking don't stop playing it. It's not. It sucks.
It doesn't suck. You know what? It's not that
fucking brutal.
It's not brutal.
This song sucks. It's not a fucking classic. This song, this needs to be on the box set. Oh, it does?
Yeah.
This song from this album? Come on,
Paul. Well, he's thinking that because he's like, nobody bought Carnival of Souls. Everybody's going to buy the box set. I want to have this song on there.
Yeah, and like every time I look at you, he needs to fucking, no, I'm going to make this a hit.
Exactly. Yep.
Right? Yep. So, I don't know. He uses some fucking dulcimer or some weird guitar, 3/4 strings on it. The fucking delivery, I just can't get over it.
Yeah.
I like the second verse vocals where they double up on the vocals and there's harmonies there. It's a real nice Bruce solo, AKA
it's awesome
forever type acoustic like solo.
Yeah.
So Bruce does a good job with it. Again, I've got what? Two songs in, Paul songs? Eh. Eh.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to Paul for the next one.
We'll be right back.
Jungle. Absolutely incredible groove. I love the groove of this song. Just that bass line, that real funky, kind of slithery kind of vibe there. Very, very, very cool. But again,
here I go.
Like, what the Paul? Flip the switch, dude. But again, he does flip the switch, and he flips it when he gets to the chorus. In the chorus, this is the Paul Stanley I love and that I want to hear. He absolutely goes nuts in the bridge into the chorus. I think he sounds amazing in the riff. Like, it, the song is great. There's a reason why it was this thing charted number 8 on mainstream rock, and it got the friggin' Metal Edge Reader's Choice Award for Song of the Year in 1997. That's actually pretty friggin' mind-numbing.
Dude, how bad was music back then?
Oh, it was bad. It was bad. I agree. No, I agree. I agree.
Well, but that's competition.
Probably fucking like Days of the New or Collective Soul.
Talking about Dangerous Toys' 5th album just came out that year.
Oh yeah. I just think it's a killer song. Even Toby Wright says it's an amazing song. It's great. It deserves to get the praise that it got, even though it was probably going up against, you know, fucking Poison's 12th album in 1997. I don't know, but I think it's a standout track.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Fucking stupid. Jungle. Paul Stanley, Bruce Kulick, Curtis Cuomo. Let's get after it. Isn't that what fucking Cuomo does before he got fucking shit canned from CNN? Dude, the song is 6 minutes and 49 seconds, the longest Kiss song of all time. There is fucking no need for it to be that long.
I love the outro. I love the outro. I love how it just
moves. I loved it when it was on the single soundtrack and named Drown.
Oh, stop it.
Fucking rip-off.
Anyway. What? Rip-off?
Dude, they're just pulling the same shit with a fucking long,
because it's drawn out,
fucking grungy exactly. Feedback shit.
Hey, you can always hit the skip button.
Lyrics and sound, very grungy. Yeah. Just very few words, like grunge songs. Ever listen to Pearl Jam? Go listen to Rearview Mirror. Or yeah. Apologize.
Yeah. Yep.
Dude, Apologize just took up 3 verses the way Eddie Vedder sings. Yep. There are very few words in this song. The drums are great. The solo is pretty good.
Yeah.
The outro I just put is Smashing Pumpkins Drowned, and it's almost 2 fucking minutes.
Yep. I agree. It's ridiculous.
Then Bruce said that he came up with the riff is all I have. It's okay. The Paul vocal delivery again.
It's rough.
It doesn't work. It takes away from the song. When he comes in and he sings that, like that commercial where he used to do the voiceover for the people jumping in a canoe, whatever that was.
Yep.
That commercial. He has that voice. His voice is as solid as it's ever been. Crazy Knight's voice. He had that voice still back then. When he's doing the chorus and pre-chorus to this, his voice is off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
So good for Paul. Now, let's go back to our friend Gene, see what he's got.
We'll be right back.
We got In My Head. Oh, the guitars on this. You got that, just that real, if you get the weird little intro and then you got, but my favorite part, especially if you listen to this with headphones on, earbuds, when that second guitar comes in with a chug, because you got the crunchy, and then all of a sudden you got, oh man, that is mid-late 90s metal grunge shit. Fucking sounds amazing. Gene sounds fantastic. The lyrics, Gene, settle down with the nest of termites. I mean, fucking relax. Okay, we get it. The bridge in the chorus is kind of a little bit weird. This is a song where I love the verses here, but I just think it's another heavy, heavy, menacing Gene song with just killer guitars.
Yeah, this one is written by Gene, Scott Van Zandt, and Jamie St. James, the Dollar Store version of fucking Dee Snider. Fucking horrendous looking hairdo. Anyway, Gene says he didn't like the lyric, so I tossed it to Jamie St. James, and he fine-tuned the lyric. So one lyric, and he's got writing credits all over this? What do you mean one lyric? I tossed it to him to fix the lyric. All right.
Yeah, that's weird. Like,
is that all he did? But anyways, I love the pounding beat. Dun, 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 dun. Just fucking awesome. And right when the verses come in, that grungy guitar comes in. That's what I wrote.
I love it.
I also like the running theme. In my head. They're in my head. That part of the song. It's just a very different type of song. And it's also got a very different type of Bruce solo on it.
And it's also got a very different type of like harmony. Like there's like the vocal it's almost like it's like a dissonant sounding harmony. It's like it's almost like jarring when you hear it.
And if anything, too, I just think the versatility of a Bruce Kulick is amazing. Incredible. When you can see what he's pulling off here and what he was pulling off when they were doing, like I said, fucking Who Wants to Be Lonely. You know, completely different type of guitar, but he still does it. All right, let's go back to Paul.
Yeah.
It never goes away. This fucking song never goes away. I mean,
I was waiting which one of us was going to throw that. We want this to go away. Please go away.
I mean, this song. So all the things that we have been criticizing Paul's vocals on throughout so far, this whole song is that. I just have the groove, the guitar, like the crawling, like real grungy Alice in Chains shit. That sounds kind of cool. I said the song drags with his whining, and that it needs a vocal that can really portray like the pain in the sound, something more aggressive. He can kind of do okay when he comes to a high note as is, but I never say this about songs, and I usually tease people who do, but this song is too long and it goes nowhere. This is just a fucking dud.
Where we did want it to go is away.
Yeah, it's
this never goes away.
This is a rough one. Yep.
All right. Never goes away. Paul Stanley, Bruce Kulick, Curtis Cuomo. Paul came up with the riff. Bruce said he called the song Black Sabbath.
Yep.
Because it was dark and really trippy. Bruce plays a 12 string on it.
Mm-hmm.
I just put this is very Soundgarden-ish. This just isn't Paul, in my opinion.
No.
It's I think that not I, him. It doesn't fucking work.
He can't do it. He cannot do it. Nope.
The bridge is blah on there. I'm not even sure there's a solo in there on this song.
Mm-hmm.
And another grungy ending. And like I said, it never goes away. I hope this goes away. Not good. And it's just another dud from Paul.
It's bad. It's these slow, like, emotive type song, they don't work with him. He just can't do it.
Nope. Let's see if we can seduce him next.
Seduction of the Innocent, arguably one of the worst Kiss song titles in their entire discography. Fucking Not for the Innocent, Seduction of the Innocent. Of course, it comes from another book. Whatever, Gene, we know you're smart. Stop. It's a weird song. It's an interesting groove because there's so many like instrumentation going on. It's got like that Middle Eastern vibe. It's when he's singing his vocal, this is what I love about Gene. Like when during the verses, he's singing with that groove and he's carrying that kind of tone that we enjoy. And then the song kind of flips. And then there's like the bridge into the chorus and it turns into like a regular, like rock song, like a rock rhythm. It's got a really weird solo, almost like it's like a fucking bazoo or it's like, wow, 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 wow. And then it goes into a regular guitar solo. That's fucking crazy. I like it only just because it's interesting. I just think it's really unusual. And again, I think Gene vocally could pull it off, but it's definitely an oddball song.
All right. Seduction of the Innocent. Gene Simmons, Scott Van Zandt. You said Gene got it from a book, Dr. Frederick Wertham, about the evils of comic books. And he goes into, if you read the fucking stuff from, I think it's from
Behind the Mask.
From Behind the Mask, about like, why does Batman have a young ward?
Maybe yeah,
they're gay. I think Wonder Woman is a dyke. Like,
yeah, like what do you do? I know it's insane.
It's just like breaking down like the evils of comic books and the characters and stupid shit like that. So Gene says that he got a bit of this from a song he wrote as a kid. Here comes a fucking title for you, Tom.
Do it.
My girl gave me chocolate ice cream.
See, you realize we've gone 5 years of this show without using that as a goof. And now we can.
My girl gave me a chocolate. Honestly, is that a sex thing?
I wonder if that's like a, is it like a Pittsburgh platter?
It's like a blumpkin.
Like a blumpkin.
Like what Vince McMahon did to some fucking wrestling chick. That's why he got kicked out of the WWE.
Oh, baby, I could go for a chocolate ice cream right now.
Bang my friend while I drop a chocolate ice cream on your forehead.
Right up there with a fucking rusty trombone.
Who the fucking enjoys that stuff? I don't understand. I'm like, oh, this sex is so good. I'm going to take a shit on your stomach.
Oh, baby, give me some of that chocolate ice cream.
I don't know. Gene, we asked Gene if he ever comes on the show. Is that about fucking taking a dump on something? You fuck. It's about an ice cream as a child. I wrote it as I was 14. I didn't know those things. All right, Gene. Sorry, man. Didn't know. Right. Anyways, girl gave me a chocolate ice cream, which had Middle Eastern melody in it because I'm Middle Eastern. I think it sounds like Head Down from Soundgarden.
But not as bad. Yeah, but,
Head Down is awesome. I love that song.
Well, yeah, and that's also got the Middle Eastern vibe on it, too, of course.
I like Gene's trippy vocal delivery.
Yeah.
I love the quirky guitar solo on here that Bruce does. I think it's fucking great. And then he turns into something a little bit heavier. I like the lyrics. I like the song. It works. Gene can do this shit. I like it.
Me too. Like the song. Me too.
All right. Do you confess that you like it?
When I look into the mirror, just can't believe what do I see. There's no waking from this nightmare, and you're lost in your reality. So you tell me all your secrets, and you tell me that you're innocent. There's something in your eyes I can see, and my face keeps looking back at me.
Track on the album, I confess. Okay, the beginning of this song with like the weird string effect, Gene kind of singing along, like where is the song gonna go? And then the song just fucking rips into gear, and I love it. His vocals, what the band is doing, this I just wrote simply, this is awesome, Gene. I just think the song kills, and I like how it kind of peels itself back a little bit during those verses. But it's like, you confess, you can't. Oh, and what the band is doing. Oh, it's great. And then I love during the outro of the song, the guitars are kind of like just real heavy shit on the way out of the song. I think it's a killer song. Of course, Gene tells a story about how he met a religious guy, and he talks about a priest who committed a crime, and who do you confess to if I confess to you, and blah, 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 like, you know, whatever. I love Gene, but sometimes he gets himself carried away, but he's cool. At least he's interesting. I just think the song rips. I love it.
All right. I Confess written by Gene Simmons and somebody named Ken Tamplin, who's mm-hmm. like a vocal coach or some Christian rocker. So I don't know. He says he got the title from the Alfred Hitchcock classic with Montgomery Clift playing the priest, I Confess, mm-hmm. where you got to see it. I love Hitchcock movies and I love Montgomery Clift. I think he's the best 50s fucking actor there was. The founding of the method acting and all that shit. Him, James Dean, and Marlon Brando. Anyway, the guy confesses to him in the confessional. And then he has second thought, shit, is the priest going to rat me out? And and it's just the acting he does with his eyes. It's just incredible because he can't speak, but he fucking wants to save people without breaking his confession. So anyways, it's a great movie. So I don't know what the fuck it has to do with this song, Gene, but regardless, I love it. Gene says the song was about being upfront, no hidden skeletons, about girls, who I am, where I come from, and what I believe in. I think the opening is Aussie-like, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Gene's vocal delivery. I think it's got a nice solo, and this is one of Gene's better songs. I really like this song.
Me too. Yep.
So, all right, let's go to the Paul's last track. Here we go.
The mirror. Now, this is what I want from Paul. Awesome riff, great drum groove. The song is moving, it's driving, it's a killer tune. And one thing I notice, again, we always talk about this sometimes on ARC or here, this is a good headphone album. We talked about the production earlier. In the verses, when the band is kind of ripping along there, there's like a almost like a distorted like slide guitar effect that you can kind of hear with the Bruce. I think it's Bruce that's doing it. Paul sounds great. He's because it's upbeat. It's an upbeat, fast, energetic song. So he sounds great. The chorus, when it slows down, it's like, and then, you know, he's kind of singing in that weird kind of like melody. The chorus is okay. Right before the Bruce's killer solo, Eric gives us almost like an Anton Figg style rip it out, like drum fill.
Yes. Fucking
killer shit right there. And then Bruce just goes into this ripping soul. This is a great song. This is what Paul should be doing on this album. Not all that whiny shit that we already talked about, because I think this song really stands out for me.
Yeah. In the mirror, Paul Stanley, Bruce Kulick, Curtis Cuomo. Bruce says it's a Hendrix-like riff. I say it sounds like My Wave by Soundgarden. Think about it.
Yeah. Okay. I think
you see it now.
Yeah. I got it a little bit. Yes. Okay.
The chorus. It's just not a Paul Stanley chorus.
No.
It's better than his previous efforts. It's got a good Bruce solo on it. It's okay. But Jesus Christ, I can't think of other Kiss albums that don't have at least two to three like I go to tracks by Paul.
Right.
So we'll get to the song rankings, but okay, not bad. Let's go to the final track.
So this is where we see Bruce Kulick singing for the first time, and I guess I should say the only time, unfortunately, I Walk Alone. The very beginning of the song with those effects sounds like every single alt-rock song that came out in the 90s, if you grew up listening to that stuff. I think Bruce vocally, I think he sounds cool. I think the chorus is cool, but the thing that I really like about this song, and I really, you know, shame on me for not paying more attention to it in the previous listens, but every time we do an album review, you really listen to these songs over and over again. I really, really like how the song builds and builds. And as the song near the end, all those verses are now sung by like a gang.
Yep.
It's not just Bruce, and it's no offense to Bruce's ability to sing them on his own. I just think it really adds a lot of like gravitas and kind of power to the song. I think it's awesome. The one thing that really I don't like, and sorry, Bruce, if you're listening to this episode, apologies, but, and I know it was 1995, 96, 97, the backward effects. I don't like it. I get it that people were doing it. It went on way too long than it should have. But I think the song is really good. It's too bad that it's the only time we ever heard Bruce singing, but I really like how the song starts off one place and kind of builds up until the very end. I think it's a good job by Bruce. And I'm not just saying that because we're friendly with Bruce. I think it's a good song.
I Walk Alone, Gene Simmons, Bruce Kulick. The fun thing is that this was going to be a Gene track.
Yep.
And it was actually Toby that said Bruce should sing this.
Yep.
Which is fucking great. But I can totally see where this was. The idea originally was Gene.
Yeah.
Right. I like the trippy opening part. It almost sounds like Shine by Collective Soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of.
I like Bruce's delivery. I like how he sings this song.
Straight Me forward. Too.
He's not trying to stretch himself. He's not trying to do things outside his wheelhouse. He's hitting it. He's doing what he needs to do. You know, when we hear certain songs like Ace's solo album or certain songs off of Dynasty, it fits him. When Ace tries to do these fucking post-Kiss solo album songs and his voice is horrendous, it sticks out. Bruce is in his zone. The lyrics work. And I like I said, I could totally see Gene doing this. The backward shit on the bridge solo special fix, all that fucking effects. And then it goes into a really cool Bruce solo.
Yeah.
The outro where you can totally hear Paul singing.
I love it.
And he doubling up on the vocals. And then another kick-ass Bruce outro, which rocks. And then back into the trippy beginning part.
Yep.
Love that shit.
Yep.
This has always been a deep cut favorite of mine.
Me too.
Always enjoyed it. It's a song that anytime I'm thinking of like Kiss, I'm like, oh, you got to throw that Bruce song on.
Yep.
Because it works. Same thing with Little Caesar. It's almost like, thank you for giving us that one track. But on the other hand, motherfuckers could have given us so many more.
Yep.
But then it lets you appreciate what they did. And thank for the songs that you did get from him and like an Eric Carr and anything that you get from Tommy and Eric Singer, because I mean, obviously they could do it. And yep. So I think I Walk Alone is a really good song. I think it works. If so, I'm wondering if this was 1987 and you're looking at Crazy Nights, Smashes going into 88 and then 89 Hot in the Shade, what a Bruce song would be like with him singing too.
Yeah.
But I like it. I've always liked this song.
Me too. I agree. Me too.
So let's do what we normally do, Tom, and let's just give a quick rundown of the album and your thoughts.
Look, I know that this is right up there with The Elder, and you mentioned that at the beginning. This is probably one of the most divisive albums out there, although I'm going to take a guess right now that there is a hell of a lot more people that like The Elder than like this, that if they're ranking albums, they're going to rank this way below The Elder, and that's fine. People are going to do what they're going to do. Who knows where we're going to rank it? We'll find out in a few minutes. But to me, I like heavy, dirty, grungy, like gnarly, like 90s music, whether it's grunge or whether it's like Pantera, they were in the 90s too. Like, I like this kind of stuff. It's different. It's unique. People say, yeah, but it's not a Kiss album. Well, yes, it is. Because guess what? Unmasked isn't a Kiss album. Crazy Nights is everything they did was different. This is different. Them doing this album in 1995, 96 is the same thing as them doing Asylum in 1985. They were trying to do glammy pop metal then. They're trying to do grunge alternative rock metal now. No different. The problem is everybody out there doesn't like grunge. So that means they don't like Carnival of Souls. And that is totally fine. You have that right. I get the grunge haters are out there in droves. In Zeus, I'm proud to say that me and you bring them out of the woodwork because we always talk about grunge and post about it. But however, I really enjoy this album because it checks off a lot of boxes for me. It's Kiss. It's Heavy Gene. It's Killer Bruce. And it's grungy alternative metal shit. So I've always been a fan. And I'm more of a fan of it now.
Yeah, Tom, for me, I'm the same way. I like the era. I like the music. This is them doing a version of that. But Kiss has always got that Kiss formula in them. So it's Kiss doing that. It's not Kiss picking up and trying to do a jazz album. Like Correct. Something different. It's still they put their Kiss-dom into these albums. You yep. can still hear it in here. The one difference this on this album that sticks out to me is a lot of that Kiss formula is Paul, and Paul is nowhere near this album.
No.
So this album takes a huge hit for me because yep. Paul is fucking brutal on this album.
I agree.
And the music that Paul does. If this was Gene, if this was a Gene solo album with a couple Bruce songs, I'd fucking love it because I like the Gene songs. No, so now you got to kind of figure out what overcomes what.
That's what I was just going to say. That's what I was going to say. Do Gene's kick-ass songs, can it balance enough of the stuff that we don't like about Paul? I mean, again, I'll be honest with you. People listen to this right now. I honestly have absolutely no idea where Zeus stands on Carnival of Souls.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'll tell you this right now. I'll give you a little hint. It's a Kiss album, so of course yeah. I love it.
Of course, yeah. of course. But I think you're right. Ranking this is tricky because we love Paul. Now, I'm a Gene guy, and I think Gene excels on this album. But Paul is, this is arguably his worst album. Arguably his worst album.
Maybe.
From a vocal standpoint.
I'll get to it when we rank the albums. You'll see.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, but let's do the songs first.
You got it. All right.
All right. Number 12 to you.
Number 12 for me is It Never Goes Away.
Ditto.
I was hoping.
Oh, horrible.
Now, this is bad, okay? Because number 11 is Rain. Now, I'm trying to think of an album that we've ranked or reviewed where the bottom two songs are Paul vocals. I'm sure it's happened, but bottom two songs, yikes.
Number 11,
yep.
Jungle.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Fucking horrendous. Absolutely the opposite I ever want to hear Paul Stanley ever do.
Okay. Number 10 for me. So I will say this, 11 and 12 are easy. Number 10, so the next few songs can kind of be juggled around a little bit, but number 10 for me, I have Seduction of the Innocent.
All right. Number 10 for me, Rain.
Number 9 for me is I Will Be There.
Each and every day. Yeah, I'll give that as my 9.
Okay. Number 8 for me is Childhood's End.
You were always my friend, Paul. Hi, Chino. Did you write that song for me?
You were always my friend.
You were always my friend. Childhood's End. Can I dedicate the song to my best friend, Pepe Castro? Number 8, I'm going to go with In the Mirror.
Oh, wow. Okay. Number 7 for me, I'm going with Bruce. I Walk Alone.
Number 7 for me, The Master and Slave. And yes, I just ranked all the Paul songs as the worst songs on the album in a row.
Think of that. That's fucking ugly.
That's true.
Number 6 for me is Jungle.
All right. 6 for me, I'm going to go with Childhood's End. I like the song.
Yep. Number 5 for me is In My Head.
5 is Seduction of the Innocent.
Wow. Number 4 for me is In the Mirror. I just love that riff, that groove, the chorus kind of, but I love it anyways.
Keep me on my way, keep it on my wave. Number 4 for me is In My Head.
Okay. Number 3 for me is I Confess.
Number 3 for me is Hate.
Oh, wow.
And it could be number 1. I just, right now, I'm going with Hate.
Okay. Number 2 for
me. And I love it.
I love it. I've been swimming in raw sewage.
I know. I remember the Osmonds. Frank, just the name, Frank Drebin.
Number 2 for me, I'm surprised you dislike this as much as you do, but number 2 for me is Master and Slave.
A candle burning bright. Number 2 for me is the Bruce Kulick track, I Walk Alone.
All right. Nice. And the easiest number 1 I've ever picked, or one of them, is Hate. Fucking love this song.
Yeah, I mean, I could have had it number 1, honestly. I'm just switching up. I want to be a little bit quirky, and I went with I Confess. Love it. Such a great, deep cut.
Yep. Excellent. Excellent.
Yep. Tom, what we do next is we rank the album compared to all the albums reviewed. So I love it when we get shit online and people are like, oh, I haven't seen you guys rank Destroy It because we haven't done it yet, you fucking idiots. Fucking God damn it.
Welcome new listeners. We haven't said that in a while.
Yeah.
You fucking idiots.
Yeah. We haven't done Destroyer.
We have 2 albums left, dude. 2.
And we haven't
Lick done It Up.
Lick It Up.
Think
Those
of that.
Those are the last 2 left. So.
And we still have a couple of big live albums and compilations, but we're reaching the end of the big ones.
Did you just say we have a big decisions?
Yeah, we got a couple big decisions.
Yeah. So, Tom, let's go to album covers. You want to tell people how you rank your album covers?
All right. So, album covers for me, number 21, Animal Eyes, Crazy Nights, Sonic Boom, Monster, Asylum, Music from the Elder, Revenge, Hot in the Shade, Psycho Circus, Unmasked, Harder Than Hell, Paul Stanley Solo, Kiss Debut, Dress to Kill, Ace Frehley solo, Peter Criss solo, Gene Simmons solo, Dynasty, Creatures of the Night, Rock and Roll Over, and Love Gun.
Tom,
this album cover.
Tom, that's Ace Frehley.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Thank you for correcting me. This Carnival of Souls album cover is awful, but it has the band on it. Gene looks fucking awesome. Bruce looks badass with the beard. There are worse. Put it this way. It's definitely not last. There are worse album covers here. So I'm going to give them credit because they're on the album cover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
So for that, this one's a little bit too iconic for me. I'm going to put it at 18. I'm going to put it below Asylum and above Monster.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the Monster
it
and
is
Sonic,
different.
The Monster and Sonic Boom are just insulting. Those 2 albums just don't even. It's just, again, terrible album covers, especially that Monster one is just brutal. And Sonic Boom is just a dollar store rock and roll over. It's awful.
Underwhelming shit.
Yeah, just bad. Real bad. Go ahead.
Yeah. So for me, reading from the bottom to the top, I've Animalized, Music from the Elder, Hot in the Shade, Unmasked, Cycle Circus, Sonic Boom, Revenge, Monster, Crazy Nights, Harder Than Hell, Asylum. Now we're in the top 10. Paul Stanley, Kiss, Ace Frehley, Peter Criss, Creatures of the Night, Dressed to Kill, Gene Simmons from Kiss, Love Gun, Dynasty, and Rock and Roll Over is number 1 right now. I am putting Carnival of Souls number 17 underneath Sonic Boom, but above that stupid Psycho Circus monstrosity.
You love everything about that album.
Yep. With 2 albums left, I don't see Animal Eyes leaving. That bottom spot.
Yeah.
horrendous album cover.
So I have mine at 18. You have yours at 17.
Yes. Okay. All right, Tom, here comes the fun part.
Oh, boy.
Let's rank this fucking album.
This is where it's going to get ugly. All right, my album rankings. Dead last is Sonic Boom, then Monster, Peter Criss' solo album, Music from the Elder, Psycho Circus, Animalize, Gene Simmons solo, Creatures of the Night, Ace Frehley, Harder Than Hell, Asylum. Top 10 is Crazy Nights, Hot in the Shade, Unmasked, Paul Stanley, Rock and Roll Over, Kiss debut, Revenge, Dress to Kill, Dynasty, Love Gun at number one. Oh, boy. People flipped out when I ranked a couple albums the way I ranked. They're going to flip out when I rank this one. Oh, yeah. Actually, this isn't as difficult as I think it's going to be, but I can't wait. You can send your hate mail directly to shoutoutloudcast@gmail.com. And attention, Tom, because I am ranking Carnival of Souls number 13 below Hotter, below Hotter Than Hell and above Ace Frehley solo and Creatures of the Night. You heard it here first, baby.
Tom, you're insulting me, brother. What did I ever do to you?
I like the album.
Holy shit.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, we'll get into a discussion right after this.
Okay.
All right. So mine so far, Monster is 21, Unmasked, Gene Simmons, Psycho Circus, Animalize, Asylum, Sonic Boom, Ace Frehley, Music from the Elder, Hot in the Shade, Peter Criss, Crazy Nights, Dress to Kill, Hotter Than Hell, Paul Stanley, Love Gun, Revenge, debut album at number four, Creatures at three, Dynasty at two, Rock and Roll Over at one.
Come on, you know you want to do it.
Well, hold on a second.
Now you're talking.
So I am looking. It's towards the bottom.
Oh, I know that.
It's a Kiss album. I love it. I do love this album. That's my point about Kiss albums. It's still Kiss. Okay. It's last.
Oh, my. That is shocking. Oh, I'm not going to lie. That is that.
All right.
That is.
Let's go through
that
this.
That is in real time, Shout It Out Loudcast shocker. I would have never guessed that in a million years.
And I like the album.
I would have never, ever guessed that.
Here's the problem, jerky. All right.
You Unmasked more than this.
Unmasked has one of my favorite songs, You're All That I Want. It has three Ace songs, which are pretty decent. Makes the world go round.
Go ahead.
The one difference about this song is, and I fucking hate the Paul Stanley songs on Unmasked for the most part, except for What Makes the World Go Round and Is That You's All Right.
Yep.
But Easy As It Seems, Tomorrow, and fucking Shandy are horrible Kiss songs, horrible Paul Stanley-led songs, just fucking terrible. I don't want to hear that.
You have Monster ranked higher than...
Let me finish. So I'm like, those three fucking songs are horrendous. But he does have a couple redeeming songs on there. And plus, I love the Gene's Naked City is a great song. You're All That I Want it's just super dear to me. And I like the Ace Three songs. They're fun. Okay. They're not bad. Now, let's go to the next album underneath that, Monster. And this is where I was going back and forth. Okay. The best song between both these albums to me is not even close. It's Hell or Hallelujah. That's the best song by far. So it obviously has the best track. Then I look at any song I fucking hate on this album. And I look at Monster and I'm like, I don't really hate anything. Some of these songs are like, what's the best that Paul brings to this album?
No way.
Like even like Last Chance.
That's not bad.
Okay. Shout Mercy. Even Gene's The Devil Is Me and stuff. I'm like, okay. That's where Paul is with Master and Slave and In the Mirror to me. Okay. I like Freak. I like Hell or Hallelujah. I really like Back to the Stone Age. I really like Take Me Down Below. Now, I really like the Gene tracks on this album.
Yep.
Paul kills this album for me. Kills it. It's just, and again, I like this album. So,
oh, I know.
I will take it. But if I had to bring an album with me, one Kiss album, I would bring Monster over Carnival of Souls.
Okay. And that's totally fine and also insane, but that's okay. That's why we have the show. No, I know people are going to be like, how the fuck do you have this ranked that high above Ace, above Creatures? Look, I like Creatures. I love the Gene solo album. I like Animalize. I like Psycho Circus. I thoroughly enjoy Peter's album. You said it. It's a Kiss album, and ranking these is very dependent on mood.
Yeah, I'm not like certain people that are like, will be like, I never listened to that album. I would never put that
album. I listen to
everything.
Me too.
Everything.
Me too.
Kiss. I don't have a problem with anything.
Nope.
Something's got to be last.
But I just, for me, I kind of, you look at it, the way you break it down I break it down by, I'm a Gene guy. That's, and this is one of Gene's strongest albums. It's one of Bruce's strongest albums, who's probably my second favorite member of Kiss. So to me, this is their album. Those two guys. Paul is super weak on this album, as we've beaten into the
ground. Which is the problem that I have.
Yeah,
when
I get it.
All things are considered.
I love Paul, and it's sad that this album sucks for him.
But when you say, give me the best Gene track, give me the best Paul track, Paul's track will win for me every time.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay?
That's fair.
Paul sucks on this album.
He does. He's bad.
It's just, he doesn't have his heart in it. It's not very Kiss-like. There's not one fucking catchy chorus on this. I don't need catchy choruses with Gene that are fucking sing-along shit. I just fucking love the groove and the badass of the way he sings these songs and the lyrics and everything. It works with Gene. It doesn't work with Paul.
All right, people. What's more shocking, me having it ranked above Ace and Creatures or Zeus having it ranked dead last?
I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with me ranking it dead last.
Dude, do you have any idea how many people are going to be on your side? I'm going to be the one who takes a fucking beating for having this ranked where I ranked. But
anyways,
it's Carnival, baby.
That's the polarizing Carnival of Souls. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to that. And let's go now to question of the week.
And our question of the week is brought to us by the great Hall of Famer, Tony the Taxman Barone of abcpainc.com. We love Tony. He's done our taxes this year. He did them last year. He is spectacular, not only because he's the taxman, but because he's a good guy and a supporter of Shout Out Loudcast. Go to his website, abcpainc.com. Go there and click on the links for all the services that he offers for individual tax needs, business tax needs, estate, everything. You can call him directly. You can send him messages directly. He is the man, Tony the Taxman Barone. We love him. Check him out. Tax weekend is here, baby. By the time this episode drops, get the rush because he's the man. Question of the week comes to us from Kyle Schneider, who we met in New York City. And this is how old this email is. I think he says, I'll see you at the first night in Madison Square Garden. And we did. So this question really is more of like, what do you think? There's no factual base to either one of our answers here. So he says, Kiss, the debut, Hotter Than Hell, and Dressed to Kill were certified gold in 1977. What do you think their current certifications are now? And which one out of those three do you think is the highest if they were to recertify them now?
My thinking is debut is the biggest seller, then Dressed to Kill, then Hotter Than Hell. I think they're all at least double platinum.
And yeah,
I agree. With the debut, maybe a triple.
I think Kiss is easily the one that's multi-platinum. I think Dressed to Kill probably approaching that too, strictly because of Rock and Roll Night, even though it's not the live version of it. It's got Rock and Roll Night. I think Hotter Than Hell, that's not very popular amongst non-super Kiss fans because there's really nothing on there, radio accessibility type stuff on there. I think they're at least... I think all of them are at least double platinum, and I think the debut is probably approaching maybe three or four times platinum, in my opinion. I wish, I don't know, we talked about this like months ago about having their catalog recertified, who does that and what. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see for sure. But Kyle, thanks for the question. Great meeting you in New York City. Appreciate it, and thank you very much. We always love our questions of the week.
Tom, where can people find us?
Go to our website, the best place to be, shoutitoutloudcast.com. That's where you can find all of our episodes. You can listen to them directly from the website. Shout Out Loudcast, Album Review Group, Dome Damage, Zeppelin Chronicles, everything. You can also click on all of our links are there, all of our social media links. Our Patreon link is there, our Amazon shopping link, our merch page. Everything is there. Please check it out. You can comment directly on there too, which is great. So please do that. And also our email. And if you want your question of the week read, we keep them in a little folder. We pull one out of the hat every week. We saw we pulled Kyle's this week. If you want to be part of the show, we do one every week. And then at the end of each year, we do a big mailbag episode. So please send those questions of the week. And you can use our email, shoutitoutloudcast@gmail.com. We read each and every email that you send to us. We can't get to all of them during the show, but we do read everything you send us. So please keep those coming. And of course, our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. And don't forget about our Spotify playlists. Every episode that has a playlist, a ranking, a draft, a top 10, we have an accompanying playlist to search for those. Look for us on Spotify, Shout It Out Loudcast. Search on our profile, not the podcast page. That's where you can find all of those. And we always like to say that we are a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network of shows.
Tom, people can always DM us, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can find us on Threads, TikTok, wherever social media. We usually have an account there. So make sure you check out Tom's playlist, like he said, on Spotify. Thank you for that, Tom. And subscribe to our YouTube channel. That is a lot of fun. And you obviously just search for Shout It Out Loudcast. And you pull up all our YouTube stuff. And then in addition to that, give us one of those 5-star child reviews on Apple Podcasts, Facebook, Spotify, wherever you can. And people can ask us questions on Spotify as well. And we try to answer that and publish those as well. So thank you for those. You can email us at shoutitoutloudcast@gmail.com, shoutitoutloudcast@gmail.com. And then make sure you go to our website, shoutitoutloudcast.com. There you get merch, new shirts and designs, Shout It Out Loudcast merch. You can find there. You can also look at pictures. Send us photos if you want to be on the website, just with your Shout It Out Loudcast gear, and let me know that it's okay to put onto the website, and I'll do that. You can go to our Amazon store. That's a way of helping us out. And in addition to that, you can look at the photos of our previous guests and guests that we're getting. We're getting a bunch of people. I think we got to give it a rest because we want to get some regular episodes in, not just interviews. But
yeah,
you know, we've just been on a hot streak here, and we appreciate all the kind comments and texts and everything that we got recently, specifically today at the episode dropped for Steve Vai. A lot of our good friends emailed us and texted us. So thank you very much. That much appreciated, guys. And we got some more coming too. So
get ready. Absolutely. Yes. Thank you.
Anyway, Tom, what we like to do is end on famous last words. You got any?
I do. I'm obnoxious and no one's home. In my head, cardboard boxes filled with hate. In my head, they're in my head.
Fantastic. A towel? Wonderful. Each and every day,
God,
people turn away, change the things they feel, change the things they say. Tom, Loudcasters, Kiss Army, thank you.
Loudcasters, Kiss Army, Carnival of Soulers, Haters, Nest of Termite people, thank you for everything. Zeus is always my friend. Thank you.
Peace out, Girl Scout.
Hit the music.
What I'd like now is for all you fat, out of shape, worldwide kiss-tards to keep the noise down while I show your ladies what a real sexy man looks like.
Listen, all you people out there sitting on rented furniture, settle down. Cut the music.
Anybody seen Richie? Anybody know why Richie did Bobby Lupo?
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football.
FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.